How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this gorgeous Monday morning. Titans get it done. Chase will be back. He's off this week, so he will not be with us today or this week. So he's getting a much-needed break during Thanksgiving week. Titans come off the 30-24 overtime victory. We talk with TD, Teron Davenport, on the line with us, NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. Also talking with TD is his podcast that you can hear drop on Wednesdays on 102.5 The Game, plus Nate and TD on Fridays during the 6 o'clock hour here on 102.5 The Game. The Titans get a big win, Teron, but it may come at a cost. It looks like Jayon Brown, his season may be over. That was a bad, bad injury, and how do you replace a guy like that on defense? He had been playing really well.
Yeah, Jayon Brown is definitely he's out for the year, it looks like. And it's going to be tough to replace him. They went with the veteran, Will Compton, yesterday. But I think down the line it's going to be David Long once he gets activated from the reserve COVID list. And I know he's very anxious to play football. It's been a while since he was out there consistently. And ironically, the last time he had a really big impact was in the Ravens game last year in the divisional, well, earlier this year in the divisional playoff game. So definitely think that'll be a great opportunity for him. He's a smart player. He's instinctive. He's a playmaker. So that'll help. But then once Kenny Vaccaro, once he gets clear from concussion protocol, I would expect to see them use a lot of three safety looks. They like to do that anyway. So, you know, have Vaccaro and Byard along with Amani Hooker in there. That will help. And then they could do a lot with Desmond King because he's a very stout, squatty type of player that could play the run as well.
They end up having their third player at left tackle because of the injury to Tyson Brailo yesterday. So third guy at left tackle this season. And so let's just start there with Sam Brailo. What do you think is going to be the diagnosis with him? I know Mike Vrabel will talk at 12:30 today. I don't know if we'll get anything out of him, but he will talk at 12:30 if he's unable to go for any period of time, maybe the rest of the season. What do you think is going to be their course of action at that position moving forward?
I think it's pretty simple. They're going to have David Quesenberry play left tackle. And Mike Vrabel has a very strong relationship with Quesenberry. He's a guy that, you know, helped teach his son Tyler how to play tackle. And, you know, his son is out there starting Division I with Boston College. And they just have a thorough relationship. It goes back to their days in Houston. And I feel that Mike Vrabel believes in Quesenberry and feels that he'll be able to go out there. He did a solid job, actually. You know, Ngakoue was a bit more quiet yesterday once Quesenberry went in there. And I'm not going to say it's all on Quesenberry. You know, he lined up on the right side a few times as well. So that definitely helped. I think that's going to be their course of action. Everyone is saying Isaiah Wilson. And I get it. He's a first-round pick. But I think he's going to still be a reserve. But he's inching closer to getting out there on the football field. I just wouldn't flip Dennis Kelly from right to left and put Wilson in there. I think if you just swap out that left tackle position rather than two positions, I think they'll be better off.
What do you think, and I'm just asking for your opinion because we don't know behind closed doors really their discussions, but what do you think they would like to do with Isaiah Wilson? Do you think in a perfect scenario that they would just be able to keep working guys in and out of there and just keep him off the field this season, or do you think ultimately they are dying to get him out on the field? How do you think they feel about him behind the scenes?
Oh, they definitely aren't dying to get him out there on
the
field.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about it.
Yeah, I think it's a wise decision. It's been a rough start for him. You know, dealing with COVID, some of the other off the field stuff he's had to deal with, and then even just being there in practice, it hasn't been, you know, the best start. But I don't think that's any type of indictment on Isaiah Wilson as a person or prospect, as a football player. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, and that's the course that they're taking. They go out there before games, and that workout that they put him through, it's pretty intense. And, you know, he's going through and working on techniques, and they're coaching him, you know, throughout practice. You even saw him get a little bit of coaching during the game on the sideline from, of all people, Craig Aukerman was working with him on something. So I thought that was interesting. It's just clearly a work in progress. They have no doubt that he's eventually going to slide in there and be the right tackle. It's just going to take a little bit of time, and they have the luxury of having a guy who is pretty solid in Dennis Kelly, and you know, he's under contract for a couple of years, so they're in good shape there.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Just opinion wise, that they're not in any rush to get him out there, and would probably prefer that he doesn't play. But so then my follow up was going to be: so does that mean that there is cause for concern on his future? On, you know, what does that mean that you're in no rush to get your first round pick on the field? But I think you kind of answered that. You don't think that is cause for concern at all, feeling that
way? No, and that's the problem with the microwave mindset. Everything has to happen immediately. Just because a guy is a first round pick, that doesn't mean he has to come in and immediately contribute. And especially when you're looking at the back end of the first round, I don't see that being any indictment whatsoever on Isaiah Wilson or John Robinson or their personnel department. I don't think it's an indictment at all. The future is going to be fine for him. You just have to give it a moment to work out. I mean, you know, you look at everybody rushed to judgment on Eric Fisher when the Chiefs selected him with the first overall pick, and they called him a bust. In fact, he was getting comparisons to Tony Mandarich, but now he's an all-pro caliber player. So it just doesn't always happen immediately, and that's a serious flaw that we have as a society.
How did they get this done yesterday? I mean, I've already admitted, I didn't think there, with all the injuries, you know, all the news coming out, Clowney's on IR, no Kenny Vaccaro, just the bodies that were stacking up that weren't going to be available. I'm like, they're just not going to be able to find a way to get this one. And yet here we sit here on Monday and they found a way to win. It's pretty incredible. How did they get this win?
Well, it's classic Titans football. They managed to find a way to keep the game close, keep it from being out of reach. And then in the fourth quarter, things just start to turn back their way. You see, Derrick Henry's runs start to get a little bit longer. You see the offensive linemen continue to block. You start to see the defense, hands on their hips, breathing hard, you know, and having trouble from play to play. And that's really what happened in that game. But then, you know, you got a timely sack from Harold Landry. It was a perfectly tiered pass rush. You had Simmons on the opposite side coming in from that five technique, and you know, he got that pressure. Landry, you know, was able to get there, and Lamar Jackson didn't have anywhere to step up, right? And Will Compton was in on that pressure as well, and Landry brought him down, and that set up the run for Derrick Henry. And let me tell you, that jump cut and acceleration, that is rare, and it's special. And I think it's something that is underrated. I asked Derrick about that. He responded with me, asking me what I think, and, you know, like I told him, you know what I think. I think it's special, and I think it's something that really was a key to them winning that game. And you can't leave out A.J. Brown's play, you know, breaking three tackles and carrying a linebacker into the end zone. You watch this team, and it's just like, you know, it makes me think of back in the day, right? They used to have these wrestling figurines, and they were like 8 inches tall. You know, you would just kind of – you play with your friends, and you bang them against each other, and you make them wrestle. Like these Titans pass catchers and Derrick Henry, they come across to me like guys who used to be over aggressive playing with their figurines back in the day, because they definitely are excellent at yards at the catch, and you know, they play the game very aggressively. And even John Harbaugh said that they're probably the best run after catch or yards after catch or yards after contact team in the league.
I'm talking to Teron Davenport, ESPN Titans, an NFL reporter, talking with TD every week on our station. And Teron, I think you hit it in a nutshell. The Titans made the key timely plays. The Ravens made some timely mistakes, and the Titans come out on top. Let's dive in a little deeper on what you were saying with Isaiah Wilson. I think your point is well taken. If he's not ready, he's not ready. And it's, you know, it's too bad to be convenient if he were ready. But if he's not, you know, they've gone to the well. Quisenberry has been a great fill-in here and there. If he's got to be the starter, they came up with Brewer. That was a great performance by him. I saw Nate Davis make a great block down the field on that decisive play that you were talking about, the game-winning play.
Yeah.
So they're, Khalif Raymond made a great block way down the field. So collectively they're figuring it out. But who would be the next sub, right? You need to have that next sub that you can plug in. So if it's not Wilson, and I see your point. You know, you'd have to move guys around, starting with Kelly, to make a big switch like that. So if you're going to plug Quisenberry in, who's the next guy for the plug-in position?
Well, after that, I would imagine that's when you're in the situation where you would flip Kelly to left and have Isaiah Wilson go in at right. But you still have the ability, and this is, I swear, is what's keeping Jahmyr Douglas on the roster. He could play any of the five positions.
Yeah.
Right. So you could put him in at left tackle. Now, if I'm Ryan Tannehill, I'm, you know, giving it Gary Coleman. What you talking about, Willis? Look, if he goes at left tackle, but you know, it's something that can happen.
Yeah, that's that will be something they hope they don't have to deal with. But every team seems like they're getting to this point. They're having a lot of guys drop like flies. So, who do you think they have a chance of getting back? You know, you've got Saffold. You mentioned Vaccaro. There's so many key guys they were without. And you start taking roll and start asking the question, who might you get back for this huge game against the Colts?
Yeah, I would imagine that they should be able to get Saffold and Vaccaro back. I think Humphreys is on the table. I would also imagine that Christian Fulton is a possibility. We saw him getting a little bit of work on the side field this past week. So, those are some options. I would say those guys would definitely, you know, be in play. Mostly Saffold and Vaccaro, though. But it's just hard to tell because we don't know how serious that ankle and shoulder is for Saffold. And Brewer, you know, actually had a solid game. I just don't know about this week going against the Colts. We have Grady Stewart, I want to say, number 90. And, of course, DeForest Buckner. Those guys are grown men in the middle of that defensive line. So you probably do want to be at full power and would prefer strength on strength with Saffold going against them.
Mm. Tough matchup for sure. Special teams, we were all over it last week. They were a disaster against the Colts. Got to give them a lot of credit. They really were almost perfect, right? And then when you give them the big plus with the fake punt, which is a massive play in the game, to be able to hang in there and get the field goal at the end of the half. So kudos to them for getting it fixed.
Yeah, and it's ironic they were able to sneak Logan Woodside in there as the personal protector. And, man, that was quite a throw, a really good catch by Westbrook.
That was not like you see a lot of fake punts, Teron, where, you know, you or I – maybe, you know, you have all the time and you just fool the defense, the guy's wide open. That was not the case, right? That was a professional throw and catch.
Yeah, it definitely was. So I give him credit there. If there was one thing, if you want to white glove it, I would say the kickoff returned. They had a couple starts that were not, I think it was once it was inside the 20, but they started inside the 25 a few times. So,
yeah.
You know, that's something that can improve, but you can't make monumental strides in 1 week. I think what they did was a good sign of growth. Trevor Daniel got the ball out there and He didn't shank one, and, you know, he was able to drive it, so that was good. They got good coverage. So I think you're right. You know, they played a solid game for sure.
Another thing we've harped on, I know you've asked the questions to Coach Vrabel, but having the game where both Corey Davis and A.J. Brown made clutch catches at key times, that was a really welcome sight. I just love how they worked together in the fourth quarter and in the overtime in particular. That it was almost how you draw it up, right? You have Henry doing his thing inside, and you have the two guys working outside.
Yeah, and I tell you what, it's kind of jumping into the future, but I think this organization really has to strongly consider and work to get Corey Davis back. You paid Ryan Tannehill $118 million. That's the contract he has. So you need to make sure that the guys that he likes to throw the ball to are there. So obviously Jonnu Smith, who has more touchdowns than any other tight end in the league, might I add, he's someone you got to bring back. But, yeah, Corey Davis, I think that's something that they really, really have to strongly look at to keep this offense intact.
Yeah, I've been saying it. I hope they continue to work on that. I think now's the time because, right, it's not going to – I know the market's uncertain. To me, you try to take advantage of that and try to get some talks going. Even if you can't get a deal done, try to get the groundwork laid before he hits the open market.
Yeah,
it's all going to be about price.
There will be some teams.
It's all going to be about price.
Yeah, I mean – hey, what purchase you make isn't about price. So, you know, that's something we know. But there are going to be some teams. You know, the Eagles, I would imagine for sure will be in the market for a guy like Corey Davis. I think the Packers will be a team. There's going to be teams that for sure will be interested.
Last thing, Teron, just your take after you get a chance to watch Lamar Jackson and the Titans did a pretty decent job of corralling him and not letting him run wild like he has. He still had, you know, decisive yards, but they did about as well at containing him as you would hope. They kept him under his average for yards rushing, and he misfired on just enough throws with sort of the shaky weapons they have around him. What are your thoughts on the Ravens bouncing back by the end of the season? Did we lose
Teron? Teron may be on mute. Maybe he accidentally hit mute.
I don't know what happened there.
We're just
blank. I couldn't hear anything.
Okay.
Thoughts on Lamar Jackson. I think he's still a top level player. He's one of the best playmakers in the game, and it continues to be that way. And you know, we've been told over and over that he can't throw outside the numbers. Well, I'll tell you what, he made a really nice throw to Mark Andrews for a touchdown in the second quarter. I don't get the rush to just, you know, tear this guy down as a player. Obviously there's room for improvement, but I think the Titans did a solid job against him. They were able to, you know, limit big plays, his explosiveness as far as running the football as well. So, I mean, after watching him, I still, just like Mike Vrabel said on Friday, I don't think much has changed as far as him as a playmaker from last year to this year. It's just package-wise, they're a bit more limited, you know, because of personnel and injuries. And Marquise Brown, you know, is definitely not helping him. And that's something that they have to get together. But, yeah, Lamar is playing fine in my book. His numbers are pretty solid still, so I don't have a big problem or issue with how he played yesterday or at any point this season.
Big game for them on Thursday for sure. Teron, thanks a lot for joining us as always. We'll talk to you again soon. Tell us about what you got in store later this week on Talking with TD.
Oh, yeah. So we'll have Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN, NFL Nation. And then I think with this Clowney situation, with him being placed on injured reserve, I always want to keep the draft in mind. So I have Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan. We're going to talk a little bit about some outside linebackers/DNs A guy that I think is really interesting out of Pitt is Patrick Jones, the second. So I want to talk to Emery a bit about him. I got to watch him this past weekend, and he's an impressive player. So that's what we're going to do.
Sounds good, Teron. That is a big area to look on the horizon. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to Teron again soon. In the meantime, Darren has a word from a big sponsor of ours.
Yeah, show sponsor. So we're proud to be associated with Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, which you hear us talk about all the time on the show because they do sponsor our show. And they've also got a small batch bourbon that's crafted. That's what's interesting. They're very proud that this is all crafted in Memphis, Tennessee. So right in our state, just west of us, and they're proud of that. And Blue Note Juke Joint is artfully crafted in honor of the blues. That's also something important to them. And you always hear me say smoother than smooth. If you don't believe me, you should try it for yourself. I had a buddy of mine who just tried it over the weekend. In fact, he got that 9-year, that premium small batch, 9-year bourbon this weekend, and he tried it and gave me his review, and he really, really enjoyed it. He talked about it being smoother than smooth. It's unfiltered at 93 proof. It's available in our area right here in Middle Tennessee or in the entire state. Blue Note Bourbon family includes Blue Note Juke Joint, which you hear us talk about, plus the Blue Note Bourbon Premium Small Batch that I've talked about. I haven't had a chance to try it yet. You can follow them on Instagram at Blue Note Bourbon and on Facebook. Look, the holidays are here. We know this is going to be a big shopping week, and if you've got a bourbon lover in your family or your circle of friends, hey, this is the perfect time to get them that gift. Like I said, you can find them anywhere here in Middle Tennessee, your favorite liquor store, or anywhere in the state. Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Please enjoy responsibly.
And that's the problem with the microwave mindset. Everything has to happen immediately. Just because a guy's a first-round pick, that doesn't mean he has to come in and immediately contribute. And especially when you're looking at the back end of the first round. I don't see that being any indictment whatsoever on Isaiah Wilson or John Robinson or their personnel department. I don't think it's an indictment at all. The future is going to be fine for him. You just have to give it a moment to work out. I mean, you know, you look at everybody rushed to judgment on Eric Fisher when the Chiefs selected him with the first overall pick, and they called him a bust. In fact, he was getting comparisons to Tony Mandarich, but now he's an all-pro caliber player. So it just doesn't always happen immediately, and that's a serious flaw that we have as a society.
Well, it doesn't look good. We'll maybe learn a little bit more about Tyson Brelo, who has, of course, replaced Taylor Lewan, who's out for the season. And we'll find out what the status is for Sam Brelo maybe today at 12:30 when Mike Vrabel speaks to the media. Quisenberry is who replaced him, David Quisenberry, and if Sam Brelo is out for any length of time, it looks like that could be the direction they go. But how do you feel about that if indeed Isaiah Wilson does not touch the field this season? Are you okay with that, or is that a problem for you?
I'm okay with that because that would mean they would have no more injuries from now to the end of the season, which I'm concerned that even as much as I think they would like to, quote, redshirt him, because it looks increasingly clear that despite the fact that now he's been on the field and practicing for, what, about 3 weeks, he doesn't appear to be an option at this point. He certainly is not to the point where they could plug him in to any other position besides the position they drafted him for. So that's part of the problem, is even if you wanted to put him in, that forces you to move Dennis Kelly, and they don't want to do that. So I get it. If he's not ready, he's not ready. But I think it's really intriguing that, now, of course, if Kelly gets hurt, I don't see who else they would put in there. Because, as you heard Teron say, Quisenberry was the last guy that they had available to sort of plug in. And he kind of said the issue with Jamel Douglas. They have Douglas, but he seems to be nothing more than a live body. Right? He can play every position, but he doesn't play every position well. Yep. Yesterday he goes in for the one play, and they ask him to make a snap. And Henry
lose 20 yards.
Yeah, and that was catchable snap, but when you have the running back there, that may not have been the best idea to have that play called for that situation. But, you know, he is not ideal. So you're down to him, and you're down to Wilson, from what I can see. Now, I'll tell you this. I had never heard of Brewer before Friday when we were kind of calling roll, because we were sort of asking this question.
You didn't have Aaron Brewer on the tip of your tongue? No.
Aaron Brewer was not on the tip of my tongue. And Aaron Brewer got the job done, right? He did a nice job from what we can tell. You know, they ran the ball effectively. They had an effective offense. He didn't have five penalties called on him. You know, he got by. But that was against Raven backups. And as Teron pointed out, this week is a whole new story. But, I mean, it's at a critical point. The prognosis on Sobrio doesn't look good. I don't know if Stafford would be ready to go, you know, with the combination of injuries that he has. The way his ankle got rolled up against the Colts, that's one of the bad ones. You know, it looks more like a high ankle sprain that takes longer to heal.
Yep.
You know, it's one thing if you roll it inside, it seems like you could come back faster. So I don't know if he's going to be ready. Teron seemed to be a little optimistic, but you see what I'm saying? You're down to the wood. Almost, right? So I think it's just an interesting storyline of, do they need to try to speed up Wilson, just have him ready? They don't have a choice now. He's got to be ready, even if he's just a backup.
How do you speed him up?
I don't know. Do you give him some reps in there? Do you try? Like, I can understand not wanting to move Kelly to the other side, right? Brad Hopkins was the one that sort of said when Luan got hurt, not a good idea, right? Just keep him on that side. But if there was a week to do it, this is another opportunity. If Sombrio is out for the rest of the year, do you want Kelly on that side and try Wilson? It makes some sense, right? And you could keep Quisenberry as your wild card that you could plug, your plug-in guy.
It's hard to judge Isaiah Wilson on whether this what he is or what he isn't. Because none of us have any clue. I mean, nobody has a clue. Yeah. And so if he
but
doesn't
you have a sense.
Touch
you,
the
you
field.
You can sense that he's not ready, right? He wasn't near a coach. You know, the coach wasn't like, okay, Isaiah, get ready. You might get it. It didn't look like that at all. It hasn't at any point, right?
We kept hearing that about Nate Davis for a good portion of the first half of the season last year, right? And then he started playing, right? And then every game, just like everything, with experience, you get better, right, with that experience. And it's kind of like going back to, and I know it's different, but this whole thing that we're going to talk about in 35 minutes when we head east and we talk to Vince Ferrara about Tennessee, it's like this whole, and Jeremy Pruitt yet again said, Jared Garantano gives us the best chance to win. It's like, are you serious? Like, really? You're still going to keep saying this? Like, people want to know, what do you have? Like, so you keep trotting out saying he has given you the best chance to win, and yet the last two games, when you're down and out and it's over, you're willing to throw this kid in there. Well, why don't you just throw him out there and see what you have? I mean, you've lost five in a row. Like, this season's going nowhere. So I think it's only natural that players with, you know, the more experience you get, hopefully the better you get. That's the hope. And I just can't imagine that this offseason we're going to talk about an Isaiah Wilson that we've never seen, and we're still trying to figure out what do they have in a first-round pick. What is he? Nobody knows. You know, I can't imagine that. Like, I have to believe we are going to see him this season, don't you think? I can't imagine that we're not going to see him on the field, that they're going to go 16 games in the regular season and maybe beyond, because if they go 16 games, they're not going to throw him out there in January. So if he goes the whole regular season, we won't see him, you know, this regular season. I can't imagine a scenario where with – how many games do they have left? They're now, what, 7? So they have 6 games left in the regular season.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's a long time that we do not see him on the playing surface.
A lot
can
happen.
I can't imagine it.
A lot can happen between now and the end of the season. So the only thing you can hope is that he is making daily progress and he is, you know, dialed in. I just think it's a fascinating story because, I mean, you are down to the scrap heap. Like, it almost seems like you're going to have to find another guy to add to the practice squad. You just got to keep bolstering depth because they're just dropping like flies here on the offensive line.
You mean you didn't have Nick Westbrook? What is it? Icon? I don't know the how do you say his last? How do you say his name? You didn't have him on the tip of your tongue yesterday being a factor?
None.
Isn't he the one who caught the pass from Woodside?
Yeah, you know, at least
the fake punt.
Yeah, at least we had seen him at some point before. But that is a big part of the story of this season is finding guys to give you little contributions, and they've had their share of those for sure.
And I said every week there's always a guy you're like, who the hell's that?
Who is that guy? Yeah, Brewer wins the award for this week. But yeah, but how about Breon Borders?
I was gonna say he's
Breon Borders out there every play. Yeah, yeah. And now Will Compton, like you touched on. That's another thing that, you know, they've got to really do some. This is changing their preparation a lot, right? Not having Jayon Brown is a big thing, and it's too bad because that was kind of a cheap play, where the guy submarines him, clips him, and it looks like he broke his elbow. That's the report. So he's done. So David Long, come on down. He's been on. We've been asking the question, where is he for weeks? He hasn't been a factor. So they need him more than ever now. Even if it's a combination of him and Compton, or what else can they dial up there? But this is alarming. How many guys they've had to get through without? But I guess you know what I'd like to do, Darren. I would love to see. And I don't know the answer. How does the Titans' injury list, which looks dire, compare to other teams? Because that's going to be a big part of the story for a lot of teams down the stretch, is who do you have left, right? And who's had a little bit of luck to keep most of their team together on the field?
Yep. Oh, it is going to be this is what it is. This is life in the NFL, and the Titans are facing what everybody is facing, right? Who can keep trotting out enough bodies and keep piecemealing a roster and figuring out ways to win? I mean, Jayon Brown is look, they did it yesterday, and we said, you know, how did Kenny Vaccaro and Clowney? It's like all these guys, there's still not been – is Adoree Jackson going to play this season? Is he going to play? How long can they keep doing this and get away with it?
They desperately need him out there.
I know. We've been saying it, and I know that there's a reason why they've activated him, because they have to believe, because they don't want to shut him down for the year. But, gosh, when is it going to happen? It's a war of attrition this year.
Christian Fulton's another one. Brett Kern is another one, right? You're hoping that those two can return.
Yeah, I don't.
And as Floyd has pointed out many times, like there's a difference between missing a guy for a few weeks and then missing a guy, you know, he's gone. Like, so now we know the rest of the way. Brown's gone.
Yep.
Luan is gone. We'll see about Sombrio, but you're hoping to get some help with guys coming back at some point. That is going to be huge if they can get just a handful of those guys. Like, how long are we talking with Saffold? Is it going to be a few more weeks, right? He's a critical player that you'd love to have. But that win yesterday is so big because now, you know, they're going to be an underdog to the Colts, I think. Right, it's there. Colts are playing really well. If you get it, great. If the Colts win that game, they're going to have a very good stranglehold on the division. A very good stranglehold. But you're still very much in the wild card, even if you lose that game. The schedule perks up a little bit, and you're hoping to, you know, have enough of a enough momentum going into the playoffs that you could make a run. Because the playoffs are so far off now. We're still a month and a half. You still got to get through another month and a half. So a lot can happen.
All right, I just went to DraftKings, and what do you think the line is? This is the first time I've looked at the line.
I'm going to imagine that the Colts are a 3.5-point favorite.
They are indeed a 3.5-point favorite. Over, under 49.5. So what was the first score? 34-17, so 51. Yeah, okay. 49.5 is the over, under. Titans are getting 3.5. I wonder if that line will go down, or will it go up, or will it just stay the same?
And the other
How about this?
Is,
Steelers only favored by 3 over the Ravens. Thought it'd be maybe a little bit higher. Maybe that would be
the Steelers
3.5.
It's the Steelers every week are impressive, but you just got to figure somebody's going to beat them, right? Eventually. Are they going 16-0? Are they that good?
They could.
Well, obviously they could, but come on. Odds tell you that just somewhere in this league, you're just going to have a bad week. So I think that's why the line is not that big. And I think you could argue the Ravens feel like they should have won the first meeting. Although they've lost some guys since then. They've had some guys really banged up since then.
You're going to hear me bring this up this week a lot. And I'll bring it up on the other side because we'll come back and do to Wick to end this hour. I'm going to bring that up. There's a couple things in the NFL I know. And or I think I know with one. I'm gonna bring this up and see what you think. We'll do that on the other side. We want your phone calls. A little participation to close out the second hour. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. All you have to do is tell us what you know. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 1025 The Game.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donick, and Chase.
We do want to know. It's time for you to participate. Let's go. Everybody, wake up. Let's go. $25 gift card to Burger Republic. Good gift. 615-737-1025. It's very simple. It's an open canvas. Just tell us what you know. Go with it wherever you want. Like, for example, this is what I know. Watching Carson Wentz, Willie, I just don't see it. I think, especially the market that he plays in, I'd be concerned about that contract you've given him. He just doesn't look like the guy. He just doesn't. That was a pathetic throw for pick six yesterday. They lose again. You know, we kept saying, no, I mean, Philadelphia, it's got to be them to win that division, right? Well, maybe. I don't think so. I've watched them now this season, and I just don't see it in Carson Wentz. I mean, there seems to be something missing. I don't know what it is, but something's just missing with his game. Like I said, I don't know what it is, but I'm starting to wonder if Carson Wentz is just not the guy. He's just not the guy that everybody thought he, you know, I mean, this is what, year five for him? I mean, how would you grade his career to this point? What would you give him if you were a professor of football? What would you give Carson Wentz? What would your grade be?
Well, I think going back, his grades early were A's and B's. And right. He rose to a level before he had the first major injury that he was almost MVP caliber at one point. And then there's been a regression. There's no question. So I think right now it's hard to give him anything more than about a C minus.
C minus, yeah. I would agree.
Oh, they're stuck in the mud right now. They're so frustrated. They can't take control of the worst division in NFL history.
Yeah. What I also know, Willie, is why aren't people talking about Ben Roethlisberger for MVP this season? Why do we not even mention Ben Roethlisberger? Typically, when you look at NFL MVPs, they come from the number one seed in their conference. This just in, I think there's a real shot Pittsburgh is the number one seed in the AFC, although I understand Kansas City's right behind them. But Lamar Jackson last year was on the number one seed. Patrick Mahomes the year before that, the number one seed. Tom Brady the year before that, the number one seed. The year before that was Matt Ryan. Ironically, the Falcons were 11-5 and the number one seed in the NFC at 11-5. Cam Newton in 2015, number one seed. I remember that team went 15-1. Aaron Rodgers before that. They always typically give it to the quarterback on the best team. So why aren't we talking about Ben Roethlisberger? If they go 16-0 or 15-1, and yet no one mentions him for MVP. It's like Russell Wilson, Mahomes, you know, Kyler Murray. We got all these guys, but yet no one's mentioning Big Ben. I wonder why.
Yeah, I think if they go 15-1, then he will get mentioned. But I think it's a fair point by you that probably will need to start talking about that more. It's just viewed as more of a collective effort by that team. So I think there's merit to it. I'd still vote for Mahomes, probably. But it's probably a little more wide open right now at this point in the season. There's still a lot of games to be played. I still think Derrick Henry could get into the conversation if he has a few more games like he's had. Ben Roethlisberger has a great defense supporting him. Derrick Henry does not, needless to say. So there's still some chapters left in this discussion. This is what I know. How about a little shout-out for the Commodores? Vanderbilt women's soccer, SEC champions, won four straight games.
Oh, I thought you meant the music. Okay, I didn't know if you were going music or... Okay, you're going soccer. Okay.
We're going soccer. Orange Beach, Alabama. Vanderbilt wins four games to take the title, and they beat some of the best teams in the country in doing so. A very deep, tough league. And it's a very interesting thing that's gone on in the fall sports. As we know, a lot of the leagues just didn't play. Only the SEC and the ACC among the power conferences played. And so the NCAA championships are not going to be held until the spring. And so they've got to figure out, that league and the ACC are going to have to figure out how to have a spring season to get ready for the NCAA tournament. So Vanderbilt gets an automatic bid into the NCAA tournament, which won't be played until the spring. So here we go in 2020. And speaking of that, Tennessee has paused team activities for hoops as multiple positive tests. Rick Barnes among those who test positive. So a lot of college basketball games that are slated for the opening weekend have been postponed. A lot of them.
Oh, yeah. Which, you know, that... My goodness, unless you've been living under a rock, is that surprise anybody? The answer is, unless you've been living under a rock, no. It should not surprise you. I mean, this is what you should expect. And it's not going to be the last time we talk about it. This is what it is. I mean, there's going to be a lot of cancellations. Whether they're postponements or cancellations, that's going to happen in college basketball. Although Kermit Davis also tested positive for Ole Miss. This is just what it is. I've already seen, Duke? Their game's already been postponed.
Right. Remember we had Dan Dockich on. He was going to be sent to South Dakota for that big tournament.
Yep.
Over half of the field is not going.
Yep.
I just think they're going to have more. If we think it's been tough for football, I think basketball is going to be on a whole nother level. Based on what we're seeing so far, there's tons of schools that are not even able to get it started this weekend. There's no telling when you could.
Yeah, these are the hurdles that college basketball is going to face. And, you know, it's going to be – how many games will they get in? I don't know.
They put the number at 13 to be eligible for the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
Then you're on the surface, you're like, 13 is all you got to get? Well, maybe it'll be tough to get 13 for some of these teams.
And, you know, as we will talk about with Vince coming up, this could be a special season for Rick Barnes and the Vols. I mean, they could.
Oh, they've got.
They
a
could
great
very
team.
Well be the best team in the conference for sure. It could be one of the best teams in the country, without a doubt. I mean, they are loaded, talent wise, at least on paper. Got to see it all happen, come together. But this looks like a really, really talented team. But who knows how many games they get in? Who knows how this goes? Don't know.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. All right, we'll come back. Speaking of that, we will head east because we're going to need to cram a lot of things into this next hour. We're going to talk about the five-game losing streak with Vince Ferrara. And, boy, what a game this Saturday could be. If Vanderbilt wins, boy, the discussion piece for Jeremy Pruitt in Knoxville, holy cow, it'll reach a whole new level if they lose to Vanderbilt. And we kind of laughed. We got to bring this up. I was the worst at it. I gotta put myself front and center. We laughed when Vince said, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, heaven forbid they lose to Vanderbilt. And I was like, look, I get it, but not this year. All of a sudden, Vanderbilt looks like a different team, and Tennessee is going the wrong direction, as we said earlier in the show. Five losses by double digits, first time that's ever happened in program history.
And yet, with all that you said, which is 100% true, Tennessee is still a double-digit favorite in the game.
Yep. It'll be interesting for pick six purposes on Friday. By the way, we will have a Friday show. Also in the third hour, at the bottom of the third hour, we'll go from Vince to Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. His weekly presser talking about the win and talk about this upcoming week and their preparation for the Colts. So a lot of things to cram into the next hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.